Well, I don't know about you, Ed, but I could get used to this. I mean, I have got used to it. I'm literally used to it at this point.
You're already moved beyond surprise to entitlement.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We don't score six in our next game. That's it. Ollie out.
I mean, maybe not quite Ollie out. No, but I mean, we said before the game, like, hard to predict anything other than a United win, hard to predict anything other than that front five looking impressive. There was a little wobble in my confidence in that prediction early on in this game, it's fair to say. First 25 minutes were pretty rough.
Yeah, well, I mean, rough in the sense of when Bournemouth attacked, they actually looked dangerous, or we shot ourselves in the foot a few times and looked a little bit nervous at the back. It's not like Bournemouth really created anything of note. I mean, XG is going to look fairly high compared to United's, but that's because they had a penalty and scored one from 3 yards out.
Yes, because they won a penalty. Well, no, they didn't win that penalty. No, but I don't mean that. I actually don't mean Bournemouth's performance and how it was making us look. I actually thought we looked a bit leggy. There were some passes going astray in those first 25 minutes. That fluency wasn't there.
Yeah. Well, look, I think... So Harry Maguire, for obvious reasons, had a little difficult game, didn't he? Put quite a few passes straight. I actually thought Nemanja Matic did as well. And in the past, when we've seen that kind of performance from Matic, it's because he's been tired. And I wonder whether that's true of this game, whether he was feeling a bit leggy. But, you know, if it took United 20 minutes to get into it, I guess.
But my God, did they get into it? They really did, like, super. They didn't just get into it. They were like, this is it. This is our new wave. This is what we're doing now. This is us. And, I mean, it was just, I can't think of a better word for it than scintillating. United played scintillating attacking football in this game.
It's a very football word. I mean, is there any other context apart from football in which you'd use the words? Do you often in your day-to-day work go, oh, that's a scintillating session there, John?
I just watched Hamilton. There's some scintillating performances in that show. So, you know, there's a good use of it. And that's how I spent my Sunday
Still
afternoon.
Still not day-to-day life, but all right.
No, true. I don't know.
Anyway,
theatre and football is kind of the sort of day-to-day life for quite a lot of people we know.
That's true. We should talk about Bournemouth's goal, because that was a bit of a shocker, wasn't it?
I mean, like, Junior Stanislas, it's some lovely megs. It's very well executed, and he does really well to then control his shot. But both Maguire and De Gea covered themselves in whatever the opposite of glory is.
Yeah, I mean, Maguire's really been done, and he turns very slow, and he's you know, he reacts. It's like a spider catching a fly, you know? You know the reaction's going to come, but it's all too late when it's happened. So he gets completely done. I'm sort of a mind to blame De Gea a bit less. He's trying to cover two parts of his goal. I mean, when you see it from behind the goal in real-time speed, he's hit it so cleanly. He's beaten De Gea for pace. So unless he was fully over, you know, batsman playing off stump, and which maybe could have done, but then their leg would have been exposed. So you know, I think it's one of those ones. Wasn't there a piece on StatsBomb a while back going, this is the analysing the keeper should never get near beaten at the near post sort of knowledge in football, and actually saying sometimes that was hard. Or the other way I was thinking about it is if that was 5 yards out, straight in front of goal, and he was beaten just to his right hand, I don't think we'd be criticising him.
I was watching the game with some friends over, like, on a call, and I did say that goalkeepers really suffer from slow motion replays, don't they? Like, sometimes they really suffer from slow motion replays. So it looks absolutely atrocious in slow motion, because it, like you say, it looks like he's just left an enormous channel of vulnerability. But in real time, you can kind of see that he's sort of trying to block the cross. But I mean, decision-making wise, and this is split-second decision-making, but this is the thing that De Gea is struggling with at the moment. Decision-making wise, you could say that if he's got positional awareness and game awareness, he almost doesn't have to worry about the cross at this point because the box is packed. There's not, you know, the danger is the shot to the near post. And if you're going to try and cover both, then really, I mean, listen, it all happens very quickly and he makes Maguire right in front of De Gea. So his reaction time would have been pretty limited, I guess. But yeah, watching it in real time, they look like two pretty bad errors at the time.
Anyway, so I was watching this game with not with friends on Zoom, but with the kids going crazy. So I didn't take loads of notes about all the many, many chances United created in this game. And I'm sure there were some between the goal and Mason lashing one into the top bins.
I mean, he's just... Right, it's taken us 6 minutes. That seems like a long time. We did a little chat before we started, so maybe like 5 minutes, 30 seconds. To mention the words Mason Greenwood on this show. Don't know how to talk about Mason Greenwood without sounding like I've lost a run of myself because I've lost a run of myself. But at this point, it's Ballon d'Or or bust. This kid, I mean, that is a frightening level of ability, of even decision making. I mean, you know, we've all seen, I'm sure everyone or most people have seen the Sheffield United defenders shouting about the second goal, don't let him turn, don't let him,
Bournemouth,
yeah, don't let him turn, don't let him turn, oh, he's scored now. But the first goal, he just hit it so hard, like it's just an absolute wallop, isn't it?
Yeah, and his favourite left foot before he whacks one into the top bins with his favourite right foot later in the game. So, yeah, I mean, just takes it really cleanly. It's a nice ball across from Bruno Fernandes. Good move from United, and Fernandes finds the space and Mason doesn't really need to break stride and takes it nice and early. And yeah, the keeper's a bit limp-wristed, isn't he? Because it's very close to him and he gets something of a hand on it. I mean, it's again very hard, hit hard. But if you're gonna give Dave being beaten from 3 yards out, then you can give I've forgotten his name now. Who's the what's his name?
Bournemouth Ramsdale. I've only committed that to memory because of listening to Steve McManaman saying Ramsdale over and over again. It's like a very difficult one for Scousers. Aaron Ramsdale.
Yes. Anyway, you can give him some stick for being beaten with that one from 15 yards or so, but it's just a lovely hit. And we talked about a little bit about Mason. He's not played loads this season. I mean, he's got nowhere near the number of minutes, about half the number of minutes of Daniel James, for example, but he's twice the goal threat, isn't he? Or more than twice the goal threat.
Yeah, I don't know what the multiplier is on the amount of times the goal threat of Dan James that Mason Greenwood is, but it's definitely more than twice, like without any shadow of a doubt. He's bafflingly excellent, Mason Greenwood, considering how young he is. I mean, we've had some really fine young players come through in recent times, and Marcus Rashford absolutely exploded onto the scene. But nobody's going to be writing stories about how Kelechi Iheanacho is better than Mason Greenwood, right? Like, Greenwood is just inarguable. Rashford clearly had something very special about him, and he made a real impact really early on, but he wasn't doing what Greenwood's doing. I mean, it's
I mean, Rashford made the impact with the two goals against Midtjylland and then against Arsenal, and so sort of burst onto the scene in the same way. I think there's a different level of expectation with Mason because of how good he's been in at youth level, and the sort of very natural ability he's got, and the expectations of people around the club that he's really going to make it. And so there's been more management. Whereas Rashford took a chance that he probably wouldn't have got had it not been for so many injuries, Martial's injury,
yeah,
and others. And so, yeah, different set of expectations.
It was a really nice assist from Fernandes, who I had like thought was kind of having a bit of a stinker up to that point. Like, he'd given the ball away. Well, I thought he'd given the ball away a lot, but I just looked it up. He gave the ball away three times, which is not a lot. There were plenty of accurate passes in there too. But he just looked slightly off it until he played that pass, at which point from then on, he just looked super on it again, as did the whole front three. I mean, we got the penalty shortly after that. And I mean, it was a bit of a surprise to see Rashford take. I think everyone was probably surprised to see Rashford take it. But and when he completely stopped on the stutter step and Ramsdale hadn't gone, you were a little worried. But actually, Rashford did well. He found the corner and kind of made it pretty much unsavable, which if
good
you
job
can do,
we found the corner.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it looked a bit silly. I mean, I guess that's one Fernandes, as I don't know whether Rashford asked for it or I haven't seen any interviews about it, or Fernandes just offered it as you need one.
Yeah.
Because you haven't scored for months.
Yeah.
Mostly to do with injury and lockdown, obviously, but not since we've come back. So, I mean, good for him. Hopefully that's a boost to the confidence. I guess Fernandes reckons he's just going to keep on scoring goals because, you know, that's what he does.
Well, he got the equivalent of a penalty later for him, which was a direct free kick just outside the area. So then, in the pick of the goals, I mean, there's some very good goals in this game. Most of the goals in this game are very good, but the one that had me running up and down the corridor in my house, overexcited, just you realise Martial is on the verge of something special sometimes. And of course it doesn't always come off, but there's, I mean, he'd not had a massive impact in the game up to that point, but there's a thing that he kind of switches modes sometimes in the way that I think a lot of great strikers do, where they just sort of switch on, are very alive to the moment. And he opened up some space and just right foot curler, opposite top corner. It's just what he does, isn't it? I mean, that goal, it's the Ashley Young special. A magical, magical goal from Martial.
Yeah, it did kind of feel like it was coming, didn't it? I mean, as in, you saw him get the ball, so just shifts it so quickly, and he's just got that kind of pace and close control where he can get himself that space. Not that the defender was close, really, at any stage. And it's just a perfect hit. Right into the top corner. No way of blaming the keeper on this one.
No, absolutely not. And then comes... So now we're 3-1 up all of a sudden and absolutely cruising. And, you know, it was so nice that we'd hit so hard so quickly in the period after they scored, because it wasn't just that we were a goal down, it's that we didn't look great up to that point. And it was lovely to see this team that does look... I mean, you know, of course, all necessary caveats and we'll see what happens and one or two injuries away from disaster and blah, 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 blah. But Ollie's got this team looking fantastic, and it was really nice seeing them recover within a game from adversity. Now, of course, the opposition didn't do a fantastic job at stopping them, but I do think we're going to be saying that an awful lot about teams that just don't, how are you supposed to stop this team? It's just not obvious, is it?
No, that's right. I mean, this particular team that has Pogba, Fernandes, Rashford, Martial and Greenwood, because there's so many options and so much pace in it. I mean, you think about just how slow the team was a year ago. Where, you know, if Rashford wasn't in it and Martial was injured and we had like Juan Mata up front with Andres Pereira or something, you know, it's completely transformed, and there are just so many options and opportunities for creating. United did create a lot of chances against Bournemouth, a lot of good chances as well, and I'm sure we'll do that against a number of teams to come. It is worrying when you go past that first 11. The first 11 is exciting, but, you know, building blocks, right?
Because yeah, exactly.
We were worried about the first 11 not that long ago.
Yeah,
now
exactly.
That feels a high-quality first 11 that is better than the fifth place that they are currently in.
Yeah.
And we're looking for a squad that can be better than
sure.
that as well.
Which is great, but I'd much rather be looking for a squad that can be better than a first team that can be in any way enjoyable to watch. So, yeah, I'm super happy. The break comes and then is pretty, like, instant disaster. Eric Bailly comes on for the injured Victor Lindelof. And, oh, dear. I mean, Nemanja Matic absolutely throws him under the bus within moments. There's a mix-up in the box just before that, isn't there? I can't remember exactly what happened, but there was...
Well, it's Maguire tries to play out from the back, and it's just a simple pass. He just plays it straight into the Bournemouth player, and they get a shot from there. And it doesn't De Gea save it, and it goes wide, and it's cleared, and it comes out to Matic, and then...
Yeah, and then there's
there's
no danger. Matic isn't under any pressure. He just has a moment where his gentle knock back to Victor Bailly is a little bit harder than he meant it. Did I say Victor Bailly? Anyway, his gentle knock back to Eric Bailly is a little harder than he meant it. And Bailly controlled it with the bit of his shoulder that's going to be legal in like a week or whatever, but isn't yet legal, if that. And somehow... Oh, so the referee gave it as a penalty on the field, didn't he? And so VAR didn't.
He does, and then they check it for whether it's in the box and out of the box. 95% of Bailly's outside of the box. The 3 millimeters of transition between shoulder and upper arm that it hits is in the box.
Yeah,
so or on the line. On the line is in the box.
I wonder if it had been if the referee had not given it. If it wouldn't have been overturned as clear and obvious or whatever the threshold is, or has that been completely abandoned? Anyway, the whole thing. And then Bournemouth make no mistake. I mean, it was stupid. It was completely needless. But once again, instead of this triggering a mass squad-wide self-doubt leading to a 4-3 win to Bournemouth, it just seemed to wind Mason Greenwood up. And he scored his goal of the game, that second one. That's the one with the don't let him turn, bang.
Yeah, and you know, it bounces a couple of times in the box. It's not completely clean how it gets out to him, but Martial and Rashford both involved, and it's Matic that pokes it out to him. So Matic gets the assist, juices his horse, who scored numbers somewhat, that assist. But, I mean, this goal is 99.9% Mason. And you just wonder where he's going. He's going wider and wider and wider, but still manages to get the power and to beat the keeper. And the BT Sport clip. And it's just delicious. Now you don't have crowds where you can hear the players talking. And the amount of bleeping in that clip is pretty spectacular for a 30-second clip.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's a brilliant goal, and the kid is on absolute fire. And now we're at a position where he's got 15 goals in all competitions somehow, and both Martial and Rashford have got 15 Premier League goals each. And I think it was Bill Rice from the radio in general. From the wireless, who tweeted that the last time United had two players to get 15 league goals in the same season was Van Nistelrooy and Rooney. Like, staggeringly long time ago. So amazing.
And it's a very, very, very long time since three players managed 20, which in a season, which could very well happen. I mean, there are not that many games left for Mason to do it, and there won't be that many European games. So, I mean, three at maximum for United. So,
oh, are they doing away with multi-leg ties then?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Right,
it's all in a neutral venue, and yeah, United will have to play that last second leg.
Right.
Which will be just before, it's going to run 10th of August to the 24th of August, the mini tournaments.
Right.
But so anyway.
I guess Mason Greenwood and other professional footballers won't play in that game. We didn't talk about this on the last show, actually.
Southampton have just scored from like 50 yards out, which is...
nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't. Things you like to see.
Seconds on, lads. Seconds on. I was just going to go on to talk about some youth players leaving the club, but we'll come back to it after we've polished off this game. Greenwood could get 20. We just need to score a hat trick in the FA Cup final. And at this point, would you really rule it out? I also wouldn't rule out Bruno scoring a hat trick in any game ever. Genuinely, before that free kick, I think I messaged you to say, our free kick, like, little discussions around the ball are getting to be like 2003 Real Madrid. So the first one, you've got Greenwood, Rashford, Pogba, Fernandes, all 100% capable of scoring goals from direct free kicks.
Right.
Then even after the good players have gone off, well, the good forwards have gone off, you still got Mata, Pogba and Fernandes all perfectly capable of scoring a good free kick. So, like, yeah, the lineup of people that could take free kicks is substantial.
I was fairly amused by Harry Maguire getting into the discussion.
It's like Pallister against Middlesbrough, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember that. I was at that game and Middlesbrough? Blackburn, wasn't it? It was after United won.
Yeah, it was Blackburn.
It was Blackburn, yeah. And they played the game, you know, reeking of booze because they'd been out on the lash all night. Still managed to win, though. I was reminded this week, a few people talked about it. Fergie's team talk before that game was, all right, go out there, don't embarrass yourselves, which was brought up a lot after Manchester City embarrassed Liverpool this week.
Yeah, Liverpool not heeding that. But the goal was great. There was a lot of very upsetting and frustrating VAR chat in the aftermath of that goal.
Like, oh, Vidic is
back.
Nemanja Matić.
And no wonder he's offside. He's about 45. He's exhausted. He can't get out of the way.
Yeah, his heel was about, you know, millimetres off. I think VAR was just, that's too good. I'm not ruling it out for this pettiness.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, and also, like, a direct free kick that goes straight in the back of the net, it seems very outlandish to, unless you're like Anderson standing and staring at the keeper and waving at him from an offside position, then that seems pretty crazy. But anyway, VAR be crazy, don't it? So, and then was the fifth, wasn't it? And then all the subs come on. United are three goals up. I thought we still looked really good after Mata and Ighalo in particular. They came, somebody else, I can't remember, it was Dan James. Dan James worked so hard, made a really nice kind of run and cut back. And it was like we didn't lose fluency. Obviously, like the fact that Greenwood, Pogba and Fernandes stayed on all the way through the game kept a lot of that fluency right up. But yeah, we created a bunch of chances. There's a pass from Pogba. There's two passes in this game from Pogba, which didn't lead to anything. One right near the beginning of the first half and one in late in the second. I think it was to Shaw. They're just long passes, like millimetre precise to where the perfect place the player's going to be. And he had another superb game. And once again, like, having to deal with Pogba and Fernandes seems to be just, I don't know how you're supposed to do that if you're a defender.
It's cheating, isn't it?
Yeah, literally, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, United were okay after all the subs came on. We weren't, I mean, it is a downgrade to step down to some of these players. Dan James has had a hard time this season after a bright start. Wan-Mata is well past his best. But Fred needs minutes. I mean, he's out of the team because Pogba's back and he's had a very good season. And Ighalo's got a very good goal return for a guy who's basically a sub every week. So, you know, there's some depth, but not as much as we'd like, for sure. Good job, United. Wrapped it up.
Yeah, and I guess my point isn't really about the quality of the substitutes, because we know there's a huge downgrade. That doesn't need saying. It's about the fact that there's clearly some systemic understanding. There's that the team doesn't, there's an enormous drop of like excellence in execution in the players that come on, but there isn't a drop in kind of mutual understanding and positioning and everyone knowing their roles and going. Excellence in execution and knowing their roles. That's two wrestling references, very quick, back to back. But anyway.
Sure, yeah. Look, and a note about Ollie, because whenever we have any kind of nuanced discussion, I have people messaging me going, what's your Ollie agenda? Or the other way around. How can you believe in this guy? So he's built a side that is playing really nicely, and apparently he can build a very good side. Still don't know the caveat, still don't know whether he can go from fifth to first, and we know they can't do that with this squad, but it's a team that's playing good football, proactive football. It's not just, there is apparently a plan B, which is attacking proactive football. He has, you know, has the players, especially with Pogba fit and Fernandes in the team and Mason Greenwood, who can create chances and score goals against stubborn opposition.
Well, that's plan A, isn't it now? Plan A is possession, creativity, excitement, attacking football, like dominant front foot attacking football. Plan B, I guess, will be soak it up and smash the heck out of them, which we can.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I don't know when the FA Cup semi-final is exactly.
It's a while away, isn't it?
It's a while away, yeah. But we'll find out.
Yeah.
Because against Chelsea on the opening day of the season, where we smashed them, we had 35% possession. And that was deliberately set up that way. It wasn't that much different from that in the game when we beat them at Stamford Bridge, even though it was a comfortable victory. So we'll see how he sets up. I mean, you can't exactly set up the team with Pogba and Fernandes and that forward line to only play on the break.
No, it's going to be absolutely, utterly fascinating. But I tell you what, whatever all his flaws or shortcomings turn out to be, he's doing as well as anybody could possibly hope that he could reasonably doing right now. Now, maybe you could say first half of the season he certainly didn't do as well as could be reasonably expected of him. But if this is what he was working to, then, you know, this is why, I guess, it's easy to get impatient and probably shouldn't have done. But the thing that makes me appreciate Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who I find personally difficult in a number of ways, more than anything else, is what is happening at Tottenham Hotspur, which is just absolutely incredible. I mean, it's incredible. Somebody sent me a tweet that a Tottenham fan had done, and it was like, I'm so glad this is not us anymore. And then I looked at the replies, and that was what made me glad it wasn't us anymore, because the amount of the exact same, oh no, he's the players, and Ndombele must be X, Y, Z. Like, you know, the cult of Mourinho. This guy, he is doing exactly what he did at United, only this time with all the players that he claimed to want to buy for United. So, like, this guy is just a joke. Anyway, I love Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in relation to Jose Mourinho to the ends of the earth and back.
Yes, there was a tweet from a Spurs fan who was complaining about his negative attitude and teams are not playing, it's not nice football, and he's picking on players. And I just thought, you were warned. You were warned. You know, you just knew what you were getting into. We knew what we were getting into, but you knew especially because he'd just done it.
In such a similar circumstance. Nigerian scams on Twitter is just retweeting old stories like Martial and Rashford. Don't blame me for Martial and Rashford not getting playing time, says Mourinho in 2018, and some Pogba stuff, and just like, oh, this team, this is all the players he hated. All the players he hated, and Nemanja Matic, and all the players he hated, turning into the best team that United have had by miles since 2013. Like, This is quite something. So, yeah.
Anyway, that was an impromptu 5 minutes of hating on Mourinho.
Yeah, feels necessary. It's just a don't, just be glad for what we've got, isn't it? Like, just remember how much worse it could have been and was very recently. So I want to talk before we have a little break, and then actually let's take a little break and then come back and do this, and then a little chat about the Villa game on Friday, Thursday.
All right. Buy these products.
If you want more from the show in between shows, check us out on the socials. We are NQATpod on Instagram, Ed's at NQATpod on Twitter, and we are under our real names on Facebook at No Question About That. Were there adverts for products? Will tell.
Were there even adverts, because the advertising market has been completely obliterated by a global recession and the fact that no one listens to podcasts.
Although, like, it's been heartening to see that people are once again listening to podcasts a little bit now football's back. Certainly more people listening. So hello, welcome back to everyone who's back now that the football's back.
What the f- were you doing when we were doing weeks and weeks of nostalgia-filled content? Which, good stuff, go back. There's no timeline on the nostalgia.
Exactly. So. Maybe people are saving up for their future commutes. Anyway, the and yeah, when we say buy those products, whatever, maybe if they seem like they'd be genuinely useful to you in your life, but otherwise no. Capitalism is stupid and I hate ads. Also, stay tuned for eventually we might get some sponsors and I'll change my tune. The thing I wanted to say was just Cameron Borthwick Jackson's left the club. I think, was it Joe Riley also left the
club? Has he left the club because he's retired? Because that's how old he is now.
he put quite a cryptic little Instagram message saying thanks to all the people that helped me and to those people who weren't what I thought they were. Time will tell or whatever. But yeah, big swathe of youth players left United. Apparently, the club have been pretty good about helping to make sure that they're still players that haven't immediately gone to another club because of obviously this is a terrible time to suddenly be without a club. They're providing them with extra support, I think financial support, but also like training and things like that. So that's at least something good that the club are doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way of things, isn't it? For every Mason Greenwood, there are 20 or perhaps even 30 academy products who we thought might make it but didn't make it at United. And most of the time, not always, but most of the time, they'll go on to have a decent professional career.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Cameron Borthwick-Jackson will always be fondly remembered for his fine ability to cross a ball from the left flank and just Louis van Gaal's absolutely relentless commitment to giving young players their debut just in case they make it one day and they can say,
you claim credit.
Yeah, you gave Xavi and Iniesta his debuts at two different spells at Barca. What a genius.
And of course, Cameron Borthwick-Jackson just not giving a damn while a riot was happening outside West Ham.
Absolutely. Never forget hashtag CBJ Ultras. So the Villa game on Thursday, I think Villa are playing. Villa played this weekend and lost 2-0 to Liverpool, far from at their best.
Yeah, they put a decent account in. Villa did. They were obviously very compact and literally tried to play the game very narrow for a long time and just let the dangerous gamble, I guess, let Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson have a lot of the ball, but just trusting on defending properly from balls coming in from wide areas, which they did for most of the game. And the one time they got out of shape was when Mane scored fairly late in the game. So not a great performance from Liverpool. It's probably inevitable that some of the intensity levels have dropped.
Yeah, and fine. Like,
don't we need Liverpool to take points off Chelsea though at the end of the season? So better get their form back by then.
Maybe they'll care again. Maybe this will kickstart their campaign. it was a shame immediately after we'd won that game and we were, of course, fourth in the league after full time. Leicester won at the same time, I think, that we were playing, and then Chelsea comfortably beating Watford. Although there were some shaky moments. We'll do bonus content on the rest of the Premier League football, as we're going to do throughout the rest of the season, as we both plug football intravenously into ourselves in various different ways. But the Villa game, I mean... Well, one thing that I didn't mention during Bournemouth, I thought Aaron Wan-Bissaka continued his excellent growth as an attacking threat. And
yeah,
you'd almost rather, when we use the fullbacks for width, you at this point, you'd kind of considerably rather, not almost rather, considerably rather we're down the right than down the left, really.
Yes. I mean, Shaw's getting a lot of the ball and in advanced positions, but not doing a lot with it. So... we'll have plenty of time to mull over potential transfers, and the club will have all of about 3 days to execute on them, which is definitely bodes well if you've got, you know, any of the history of United in the last 7 years. But it's good to toss up now where United might need to upgrade. Left back, centre back, defensive midfield, right sided forward were all sort of mulled, or striker. I've all been mulled, but it seems like left back, centre back, defensive midfield would definitely, an upgrade there would be very, very welcome.
Defensive and midfield?
Well, just because, you know, Matic isn't getting any younger. There's some talk about offering him another year beyond next year.
But Scott McTominay is like, I don't think you would need to. If you've got Fernandes and Pogba ahead of him, I'm not sure you need to upgrade Scott McTominay in any kind of urgent fashion. And there's cover there, given that you could play. I'm not saying you would do this against big teams out of choice, but you could play Fred there, you could play Matic there, you could play McTominay there. I think feels like that's not a position that we massively need an upgrade in.
Yes, but it's very different. It's just such a big ball difference in the ball game between a game like this against Bournemouth, where you have 75% of the possession, and away at Juventus in the Champions League.
But we win,
you know, which is
won,
what we're going to get next season.
But we've,
hopefully,
we've like won. We've that's where we've been good, and McTominay's played excellently in those big games. Like I don't, it doesn't feel like that's. I don't know, unless you're looking at playing two and one of Fernandes or Pogba, in which case, anyway, you could just play Pogba alongside McTominay because he's done that job and can. So I don't know. To me, like DM is not anywhere near the top of the list of things we need to upgrade. And I tell you what is definitely not top of the list of things we need to upgrade, and that is right-sided right forward. Because genuinely, I know you said last week, well, I hope that Woodward and the Glazers don't get too carried away with this form and think we don't need to invest in the team. We do need to invest in the team, but we need to invest in. I don't even know how you do this because it feels to me like investing in squad players is hard because they've got to be good enough to push the first 11, but not such big stars or so good that they, you know, that they cause trouble if they don't play. And, you know, so
I know. And I think the best possible quality is always the answer. I mean, it's not like that. Like, this has been great this period, but Rashford has been injured and inconsistent in the last 2 years. Right. Let's take that period of evidence for us. Right. If you're doing the regression model on this one, Martial, inconsistent and injured a lot. This period, great. Over the last 2 years, not. Well, Mason just coming through could well have a dip. You know, any one of them get injured and there's a big, big drop in quality. So I'd say the best quality possible of forward, whether it's a flexible one or a specialist, would be very good, given if United are back in Champions League, how many games of high intensity there will be next season.
But you sign, let's just take Sancho for an example, who's like clearly the best quality that we're being linked with at the moment. You got Sancho, Martial, Rashford, Greenwood. One of them is going to regularly miss out. I mean, maybe you can rotate them in the way that like maybe Fergie would have done, where they really do rotate and they play lots of different games. But, you know, there's going to be...
Sancho definitely doesn't play every game at Dortmund.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
Martial will get injured again.
Yeah, of course he will. By the way, like, we can't take the last 2 years. We can only start it from the date that the devil left football. And the devil left the club. Like, this is, you cannot...
Complete reset.
You literally can't count. Young attacking players' statistics under Jose Mourinho should be stricken from the record. Like, it's just simply not fair on them.
Jose should be stricken from the record. Anyway, there's a big diversion in transfers, which I didn't mean to stimulate, but somehow I did. We'll have plenty of time to talk about transfers. Well, no, we won't, because we'll have like 3 weeks off or something, I think, between the end of August and the start of the new season. Villa.
Yeah, so the Villa. Reason to start talking about Wan-Bissaka is just, you can't talk about this game without mentioning the absolutely hilarious chop he did, where he tried to chop it behind his leg and his leg just went way too far, but somehow styled it out, which was really good. Also, Fred styled out falling over outside the box and then still got off a decent shot. So good work to both of them. Villa are going to try and make us play compact and narrow. And actually, it's not the worst strategy, because you're effectively bringing in, not that they're necessarily bad players, particularly not the way Wan-Bissaka's been playing recently, but if you're a defensive team, you kind of want the final ball coming from the fullbacks rather than one of the front five from United. So I guess we're going to see a lot of the ball trying to be funneled out to fullbacks, but I don't think you can play that game for 90 minutes and get away with it, because the like Mason Greenwood just needs too little space. Pogba and Fernandes create space for each other so well. And that's without even considering Rashford or Martial doing something extraordinary, which they're both well capable of doing.
Exactly. Yeah, or Fernandez banging one in from 30 yards. So they're definitely, we definitely have more tools than was once the case, and it'll be a much harder job for Villa to keep us out. And then they just don't score goals, Villa, at all.
Except against us. Really. Well, they didn't they beat us 2-0 at Old Trafford?
Yeah.
God, that was so bad.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it earlier, but in his pre-match, Ollie referenced that game and the game against Bournemouth in which United lost and the game against Norwich. And fair enough, right? His point was, we have dropped points against these teams that we're playing in this period in the past. We have to be better. Perfectly good.
Yeah.
It's just he sounded so pathetically wet in making the point.
It was just, it just was like the biggest cell phone ever. Like, it's just like, oh yeah, no, but remember, we actually have been rubbish against these teams, so we can't call them easy ties. It's like, the quality of the tie is exactly what it is. Us being rubbish or not is the key thing that we have to talk about. If what you're saying is, everyone, at any point, don't worry, we could suddenly be rubbish, then, you know, fair enough. But anyway.
It all sounded, it just felt a bit Milhouse to me. it hurt. To Mourinho's Nelson.
Yeah, right, yeah. But anyway, except that it was, of course, Ollie patting Jose on the head, as he always should be. So,
well, you know, Milhouse wins sometimes. Anyway.
No.
Villa, I just don't think Villa will have enough here. And United in such good form. And we've got a few days. I was a little surprised that all of the players played against Bournemouth, given they are so open, Bournemouth, and we've had quite a few games in quick succession, and we'll have quite a few games in quick succession after this one, but they do have quite a number of days off now to recuperate before this one.
Yeah, so unchanged starting 11 unless Lindelof's knock is more serious, I guess. I don't see. I mean, of course, Villa's one key threat is Jack Grealish, a player that United have been frequently linked with this season, and to such an extent that you think there might actually be something in that story, that United have some sort of genuine interest or whatever. We had some comments on Instagram saying, never mind the Moisey Schadenfreude, surely United should want Villa to go down because that makes their position for Grealish better. And actually, maybe Grealish would be the right kind of signing for improving the squad. Is definitely considerably better than Andreas Pereira and Jesse Lingard, isn't he?
Sure, yes. But it's not obvious that he's the man for United. I mean, his per 90 XG or expected assists is pretty low, you know. Or combine them all, so expected goal involvement is about 0.4, which is okay for an attacking player. He's playing in a very bad side and he often plays off the left. So it would feel like a kind of multifunctional squad player, not a creative midfield type player, which we've now got. So who knows? But yeah, I mean, he is Villa's most creative outlet, and they give him the ball a lot. He gets fouled a lot because he's got very good close control and ability to beat a man. That will be important to be disciplined there, because set pieces could be Villa's best opportunity against us, especially if Lindelof is out and Eric, you know, expected goal against Bailly is in the side.
I love him so much, man.
I love him, but, you know, there's something going to happen.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. I also really like the fact that Harry Maguire is just well into playing at number 10 when United are on top. It's like, looking around, it's like, oh, do you know what? It looks like Pogba and Fernandes are having fun. I'm going to join in with them lot. But I really like it. Van Gaal, I feel like Van Gaal would have liked Harry Maguire in some ways.
One day he's just going to run up to a direct free kick they're discussing, just the last one, isn't he?
Could happen. Yeah, this team is absolutely flying, and Chelsea were flying and then they lost to West Ham. So, you know, stuff happens. I actually, having watched quite a lot of Chelsea, I'm not sure, even against Watford, a game they won 3-0 in the end, to me they didn't look, I mean, Pulisic is playing really well, is in really good form, but they're not looking quite as scintillating as United are. So, I don't know. I'm reluctant to predict a 3 or 4 nil win in this one. Villa, for all their kind of significant faults, have kind of made it quite difficult for a couple of teams since the restart. So maybe this will only be 2 nil. Oh God, I feel like the hubris is definitely getting out of control now. Just predicting wins time after time and not being able to see a way we don't win the game. But
yeah, I watched Villa's game against Wolves and they were competitive in that one as well.
Yeah.
And played it very narrow and kind of played into Wolves' hands, or Wolves played into their hands. I think we'll pose a very different problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as the intensity's there.
Yeah, and the thing that this must be so difficult, and I keep saying this, but to maintain concentration, you need to maintain a high level of concentration to play really deep, really narrow. You have to play very mistake-free. And playing against the United with a midfield of Schweinsteiger and Schneiderlin and a forward line of like Rooney and Memphis and whoever was playing on the right, Juan Mata probably, if we were lucky, then it's quite easy to maintain that concentration because you get a breather. They're not going to get a breather in this game. And they've got to worry about, you know, we've had 17 penalties this season. We've had 17 penalties. People are complaining about it. 17 penalties that have been checked and looked over by video people. And, you know, we've had 17 legitimate penalties because our front three is, I mean, even when we weren't playing that well, we were causing enormous problems for defenders in the box in that sense.
Yeah, Mo Salah tried to get 17 penalties on his own against Villa. Going down in stages, jeez, it's bad. He is really bad. VAR has not been good for him.
No, absolutely not. But it has been good for us because we keep getting legitimate penalties given to us and then backed by referees.
Anyway, prediction? You got a view on...
Yeah, I'm just going 2-0, straight up 2-0. I think... hopefully we won't have any defensive calamities in the way that we did have in this game. After kind of, you said, I think, like Bournemouth just don't score. No, you said they've got threats though. So yeah, fair enough. But yeah, I think unless Grealish does something great, it's probably a decent chance of a clean sheet for United. And I'm going to go for a humble 2 goals, which actually feels like, now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, 2 goals. Can this team really go 90 minutes without accidentally scoring more than that because they're so good?
Yeah. Oh, hubris is strong in this one. So. Yeah. No, I think 2 is fair. Villa don't... They will approach it in a defensively sound and organised manner.
Yeah, right. As Bournemouth did, and we scored 5 goals against them. So, you know. But this is away from home. Maybe that'll be trickier.
That's it, yeah. The whole end will be roaring Villa on.
Yeah, and side note, I think there was a game on BT Sport, and because with BT Sport, I don't have the channels where you can watch the HD version of the no crowd thing, ended up watching it with the crowd noise. And it really, I know some people like it, and it's sort of comforting to people, and I get that, but I just find it absolutely maddening. And also, I'm pretty sure I recognize the stems from FIFA games, so that's a problem.
Yes, and the algo, because it's human, is not as fast as the algo in FIFA. Yeah. Where the action and the crowd sync up.
Yeah,
here they don't. The guy has got to press the ooh or ooh or boo or chant button, which is fine because that's kind of ambient. Yeah. But it's when it's hit the post, which one do I press?
Yeah, it's impossible, and it's not anyone's fault, obviously. But the ball goes over the bar, and it's got past the advertising hoardings by the time anyone's gone. Ooh, this is weird. Anyway, very big diversion and side note. And just listening to the shouts is kind of fascinating. And who knew that professional footballers actually do all shout away at corners? Like, what do they think their teammates are going to do? Away? No, back this way. Like. Isn't away the only direction available to you on a corner anyway?
Yes, the very special part about there being no crowd noise on the correct channels is just how much they swear. And you know me, Paul. I like swearing.
Yes, you do.
I know quite a lot of words.
You know all of the words, my favorite, I'd say.
yeah, well, all the four-letter words, yes. Just how often footballers do and how often the poor commentators have to go, Well, sorry if you heard that one. I mean, look, at this point, just accept it. If you're listening on the No Crowd Noise channel, you're going to get a lot of four-letter words.
I mean, of course, like in the old days, if you were listening on the Crowd Noise channel, you'd be getting relentless four-letter words because by the Crowd Noise channel, I just mean football when there are actually people in the stadium. But, you know, anyway.
Yes, that's the thing. The FIFA doesn't have all the colourful songs, does it?
Exactly. All right, so hopefully the Reds will go marching on in their beautiful scintillating fashion. We'll be talking about whether Chelsea and Leicester will drop points. Now, we're in an unbelievably strong position compared to the start of lockdown. We've made up points on both of them, an enormous number of points on Leicester, made up 2 points on Chelsea, right? So it's happening. We are chasing them down, and it's just, are we going to run out of runway kind of thing?
Yeah, and there's always that game against Liverpool. If United win all their games from here on in, it's done. Right, Leicester, the goal difference.
Yeah, goal difference with Leicester isn't going to be overturned, so that's not actually true, I don't think.
Yeah, true. Okay, well, we'll see. Victory against Villa coming up, and we should have a pod for you just after the Villa game, although it is on Thursday, and work commitments and so on and so on and so on. So if we don't come to you with a pod on either Friday or Saturday, it'll be after the game on the Monday. And I completely forgot who we're playing
Southampton. At St. Mary's, I think. And St. Mary's? Is that where it is now? Yeah, it is St. Mary's. It's not the Den, right? That's just...
The Dell.
The Dell.
The Den's different.
It's completely different. But yeah, so that's who's next. I mean, there's no point really talking about that in any meaningful way, except to say they've been all right since the restart, haven't they? They've been all right.
They've been all right. Currently 1-0 up against Manchester City as we speak.
Right.
And good value for it, although there's quite a lot of heavy hitters on the City bench. So anyway, we'll see. We'll probably speak to you before then, but if not, we'll see you after that game.
Only 11 points behind City, to be honest. So maybe if they drop 3 points here.
I told you, seconds on.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone. Bonus content, Patreon backers, stay tuned for bonus content about all the Premier League football you could possibly wish to hear about. Everyone else, we'll see you either on Friday or Saturday or Tuesday.
See you then.